Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Let's talk to Dr. Jeffrey Copen for a few minutes here, the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. They sponsor these conversations, and it's always good to talk to the good doctor. Hi, Dr. Copen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you today, Jen?
Pretty good, and I don't even mind the heat, but I did see a story that said that the heat can affect our brain, our cognition, our thinking. I don't know a lot about this. That sounds to me like more to worry about than is necessary. What do you know about that, doctor?
I was going to say the same thing. I mean, when it's really hot and humid, does anybody feel like they are functioning at their best? Of course not.
Right.
All right. So if some scientists want to start delving into why that is physiologically, great. But the bottom line is, we all know when it's really hot and really humid and you're outside in it, you're just not going to feel your best. It's interesting, from a scientific standpoint, what might be going on in our brain, other parts of our bodies that make us feel like we do. But, sometimes, Jen, doesn't it feel like we don't need all that detail? This might be one of those times.
Yeah, I didn't need research to tell me if it's 100 degrees outside, you might be subpar. But I was also marveling at the people in Saudi Arabia who are traveling to Mecca as part of that Raj or Hajj, and they are walking through 120 degree heat. That does seem to push the human limits, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about this today, John. When it gets really hot and humid here, which thankfully it doesn't happen all that often, so much so that when it does, it's unusual enough that we're all miserable, and all we want to talk about is how miserable we are.
Mm-hmm.
There are places in the world, and certainly the Saudi desert during the summer, where people for thousands of years have figured out how to acclimate to the harsh conditions, right? 120 degrees, that Middle Eastern sun. I mean, whether you've been in it or not, it's really, really hot. And there are people who live in that, and they function just fine. They've figured out how to do it. And the human body can acclimate to those kinds of environmental conditions, given time and being smart about how you handle the extreme weather.
Still, I also feel bad for the people whose customs require them to wear headscarves or clothes that I don't think look comfortable or appropriate for heat management,
Yeah, although, if you look at how people who live as natives in that environment, they cover their heads, they cover their entire bodies, but they're wearing loose-fitting garments. And they've actually figured out how to use their clothes to help keep themselves cool. It really is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And if you ever see Bedouins in these kinds of climates, how they've learned over time to accommodate the harsh, hot summer, it really is amazing. And it would be the exact opposite, looking at how they dress, how those of us coming from our culture think you would dress in that situation.
Exactly. Light colors helps, but that's, what did I see? The statistic was, because they were talking about the U.S. Olympic team and other Olympic teams from outside of France bringing their own portable air conditioners to the games, which they are hoping are going to be as green as possible. But the U.S. contingent said, we can't function without air conditioning. And yet less than half of the homes in Europe have AC at all. And in France, it's particularly acute, like less than 10%, which is weird to me that they're not more air conditioned. That's just not how we do it in the USA.
Correct. And, it's going to be interesting, as the climate does change. It's warmer in places where traditionally hasn't been warm.
Yeah.
Are people going to change the way that they live? And by the way, that's not so cheap, right? To retrofit even an apartment that has never had air conditioning, that's not a simple thing to do. I mean, John, as you point out, when my mother talks about what it was like being a girl growing up on the west side of Chicago, nobody had air conditioning.
Yeah, right. Days. Or were you?
You know, she talks about on a hot summer night, they used to sleep out in Garfield Park.
Yeah.
You know, kind of amazing, right? And because, you know, it was just really hot and there were a third floor walk up. And we wouldn't dream today of living in a place without air conditioning. It's fascinating. That's not that long ago, my mom's talking about.
Here's a different story now. The one unexpected sign of colon cancer appears to be narrow stools. How, I wonder how indicative that is. Is it absolute or not? Can you talk about colon cancer and signs, doctor?
Yeah, so the pencil thin stool, that's a it's a kind of a classic sign of what could be colon cancer, particularly rectal cancer. The cancer, what happens in a situation like that is the colon cancer itself is narrowing the passage inside the colon. Mm-hmm. So the stool, in order to get out, has to be very thin in order to get past the obstruction of the cancer. That happens rarely, but if somebody were to have a change in their bowel habit, John, where they go from having what would be normal bowel movements for that person to having very thin, narrow, pencil-thin stools, that could be a significant change. And if something like that is persistent, and, you know, just over a short period of time, a person who has that happen really should be checked out because that could be the first sign of colon cancer.
Is it possible that sometimes for a variety of reasons that the case, maybe your habits or what you ate, and then you go back to normal? I wonder how a person should gauge if, in fact, they have a situation here.
Yeah, the first thing would be change. If there's a change from what is normal for that person, the second thing would be persistence. If indeed it is a cancer that's causing this, it's going to be a persistent problem.
Understood.
But, you know, if somebody, you know, like traveled and had a diet that they weren't used to, they fly back from being abroad and there's some kind of acute change, sudden change in their bowel habit, the nature of their stools, how they look. And then things get better after a few days. You don't have to worry about that. That's a diet thing that has to do with the traveling. But if it's persistent, then you want to get it checked out.
Talking to Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital. And just a moment ago, the doctor said thinner stools might be a sign of colon cancer, but you should sort of take stock of what's happening. Is it persistent? Is it new? Then you really should get checked. If it's just a one-off, maybe because of diet or travel, then perhaps you don't need to worry so much. There's also a story, doctor, that was talking about the bird flu. U.S. labs not prepared test for bird flu in case of an outbreak. Here it is again, another story about bird flu. Should we be paying attention to this thing?
Jen, I think the importance of today's excursion into bird flu has more to do with government policy through CDC, as far as I'm concerned, than bird flu itself. And here's what I mean. If we think back to little over 4 years ago, when the pandemic began, we did not have the diagnostic test to determine whether a person was infected with COVID. We all remember that. And it took a couple of months before there was commercially available PCR testing for COVID. And the reason was CDC insisted that we only could use its test. And it didn't have enough tests. CDC sent its test to, like, the Illinois Department of Public Health. So we, the caregivers here in the Chicago area, needed to send our first samples of our first patients to the state to get tested, and that took days. And there just wasn't enough tests. Finally, CDC relented. FDA then went ahead and licensed commercial labs. They quickly were able to gear up, and then we had enough PCR tests. We all remember this. We lived through it. Doesn't it sound like the same thing with this bird flu, CDC is not allowing the commercial labs to develop their own tests. They're not allowing companies to produce tests. Only CDC is allowed to do it right now. I don't understand it. It really feels like they're making the same mistake that we lived through so painfully at such great cost 4 years ago.
Yeah. By the way, just you made me think a little bit about a story I saw on News Nation today. Raw milk isn't safe to drink, says the CDC. Well, I guess, duh, we can pasteurize it. But some people don't want to drink pasteurized milk these days. Are you paying attention to that story?
You know, this is the first I've heard of it. This comes back every once, every couple of years. I'll hear about people who want to drink raw milk. There's a reason we learned about pasteurization. People can get sick from drinking raw milk. If you're going to drink milk, please drink milk that's been properly pasteurized. Huh. It keeps us from getting ill. I don't understand why we have to keep fighting these same battles.
Well, I think it comes up for different reasons, and my understanding is that some people think that the bird flu has gotten to the cows, and therefore the cow's milk might not be so safe. I don't know where you would get raw milk except, you know, go out into a field. I don't know if they sell anything but pasteurized milk, but it just strikes me as some people looking for trouble sometimes.
Yeah, and look, I understand how there's people who feel that, you know, our so many elements of our food supply is overprocessed, and I mean, mm-hmm. and there's something to that. We all know it, but the health and safety aspects of things like pasteurization, you know, it's something we all take for granted, and we shouldn't. It's not that many years ago that people used to get deathly ill from raw milk. So let's not make that mistake again.
Real quick, my 91-year-old mom's having trouble swallowing large vitamins and gummies. Is it okay to give her children's chewables crushed and then mixed with applesauce? Or is it okay to crush adult vitamins? Do you lose anything if you do that, doctor?
It depends on the preparation of the vitamin. There's some vitamins that are prepared in a way where the stomach acid doesn't actually affect them. So it would depend on the product. I would just check and make sure. There should be something on the bottle, or you can check with the manufacturer whether it's okay to do that. The other thing is just be careful if you're giving your 91-year-old mom vitamins. There's a reason that she's getting the vitamin. She might not actually need those vitamins that you're giving her. So ask that question first.
Dr. Jeffrey Copen, Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital, chief medical officer over there, and friend of ours. Doctor, it's always good to hear your voice. Thank you for your time today.
Of course. Everybody take care and stay cool.